This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
I regard myself as a soldier, though a soldier of peace.
The natural power of the universe is harnessed in the new atomic bomb.
Terrorize people about a bomb attack while they're completely diverted and weakened in their effort to wipe out dangerous radicals right here at home.
Now, wait a minute, Minerva.
Firstly, there isn't going to be a war, and secondly, war doesn't stop progress. It stimulates progress.
Yes, war can be a highly stimulating thing.
Oh, well, after all, I'll be exaggerating the horrors of war. Don't we rather overdo that song? After all, you know, the last war wasn't as bad as some people make out. We didn't worry. Something great seemed to have got hold of us.
Something greater still may get hold of us next time. If we don't end war, war will end us.
Well, what can you do?
Yeah. What can we do?
I still have a dream that somehow this situation can and will be changed.
This is my idle daydream. A world at peace with nobody's soldiers in other people's lands. That vision seldom makes the newspapers, the television, or the violent movies and computer games. Who could talk about real peace? My mind goes immediately to Bruce Gagnon. He's the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Bruce has a blog, a world campaign, a public access television show in Maine, appearances in alternative video. He speaks, and he writes, and he protests, and Bruce has a lifelong commitment to the unsung underdogs of another America, the dream of disarmament and peace. Bruce, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
It sounds like such a simpleton's dream, Bruce. Peace as a gift to our kids, to our world. Is it stupid to even talk about this stuff?
Well, it's funny that right now the businesses of America are trying to sell us on the coming Christmas holiday, the time where the Prince of Peace was born, and millions of people, millions and millions, hundreds of millions of people around the world will go to church and pray and remember the Prince of Peace. So I don't think we're alone in that vision. The problem, I think, is that a lot of people that pray and talk about the Prince of Peace then don't make the connections and don't make the links to what our government is doing today around the world, the war machine that it has become, and how that expenditure of about $1 trillion a year on militarism, $8 billion every month for the war in Afghanistan, how that spending is actually contributing in a major way to our economic collapse at home. So I think the way we're going to have peace in the world, what the Prince of Peace wanted us to have, where we would love our enemies and turn the other cheek and forgive those who've trespassed against us. The only way we're going to have that in the real world is when we begin to dismantle this war machine, this empire that the U.S. has today.
Even in my own mind, I'm not sure a less armed world is possible. It's hard to think outside the box when you've grown up with something that's always been that way. Let me raise some obvious objections to American withdrawal, the ones that you must hear all the time, against closing U.S. bases around the world or resigning as a self-appointed cop of global affairs. So here's the first one. Would rogue states and dictatorships rise up that would be worse than the Americans, possibly arming themselves with long-range nuclear missiles? I mean, there are plenty of bullies and weak social structures facing insurmountable problems in some countries already. Would the move to peace create worse monsters than we have now?
Well, I think we have to be honest with ourselves and recognize that the number one industrial export product of America today is what?
Well,
it's weapons.
Yeah.
And when weapons are your number one industrial export product, what is your global marketing strategy for that product line?
Got to be war.
That's right. The more war you have, the more instability, the more weapons you sell, the more contracts you have. You might remember that just last month, Obama went to India with a $15 billion weapons sales to India, who has 450 million people living in poverty. Now, they can't really afford to join the arms race, but we're dragging them into it because it's good for American business. So the truth of the matter is, I believe, that one reason we have so much instability around the world today is because the United States helps create it. When I was in the Air Force during the Vietnam War, I worked in personnel, and I remember looking at the records of the officers assigned to U.S. embassies all across the Asian Pacific region. And in every single case, their job description was the same: act as liaison between the host government and U.S. weapons corporations. Basically, they were salesmen for U.S. weapons corporations, selling weapons to the host government in Pakistan and Afghanistan, all over the world. And so these are the countries now where we see the most instability today, the ones that the U.S. has armed over the years. In many cases, in most cases, it's also related to our desire to extract declining resources like oil and water and natural gas and other things like that. So there can be peace, to answer your question in a very long-winded way. There can be peace if we end our addiction to militarism, to endless war, and our demand for control of the world's resources. We have to become a good neighbor in the world, and I think when we do that, all of these things are possible.
I suppose that relates to the energy situation. If we could have self-sufficient energy, if we had solar and wind generated right on American soil, then we wouldn't have to have bases in the Middle East and go try and grab Iraq's oil or somebody else's oil.
That's exactly right. And think about it for a second. As I said earlier, our number one industrial export product today is weapons. But what if we converted those military production plants across the United States? Virtually every state has them now, as the Congress and the military-industrial complex have spread the gravy out across the country. What if the citizens were to demand the conversion of these facilities? For example, where I live in Bath, Maine, they build the Aegis destroyer that is being outfitted with missile defense systems and that are being parked just off the coast of China today. What if instead of building those, a very provocative system that is forcing China to respond militarily, what if we were building wind turbines or rail systems to help us get out of our gas-guzzling cars so we don't need as much oil, and it, in a small way, helps solve for climate change as well? And most interestingly of all, creates more jobs. The University of Massachusetts at Amherst Economics Department did a study just a couple years ago where they looked at $1 billion, and they said, yes, it's true. If you spend $1 billion on military production, you create 8,555 jobs. But they said you take that same $1 billion and you put it into home weatherization, you create more than 13,000 jobs. You put it into building rail systems and you create 19,000 jobs per $1 billion. So which would we rather have? 8,500 jobs building weapons for endless war, or 19,000 jobs building rail systems, something we need to end our addiction to oil, to help solve for climate change? The answer is simple, but the problem is the American people don't know about it. At the very time where they're clamoring for jobs, demanding more jobs, we could be creating more jobs if we converted the military-industrial complex.
Well, you raised China, and that was my next possible objection. Won't they simply dominate the world without U.S. bases all over the place?
China's got a lot of poor people they have to feed and they have to take care of. And the CIA reported just a few years ago that China's first priority was dealing with their poor people, trying to take care of them, create a better way of life. China's leading the world in developing new green technologies now as they're expanding their economy. So, in fact, there is competition between the United States and China for oil. There's no doubt about it. China imports 80% of its oil on ships. And, in fact, that's one of the reasons why the U.S. is doubling its military presence in the Asian Pacific region so that it can develop the military strategy to be able to choke off China's importation of oil. So there is a lot of conflict over oil. But again, if we move away from our addiction to oil, if we move away from the need for oil and begin to develop the technologies that lessen our dependence on oil, everything changes. Now, Obama, when he ran for president, said he was going to do this, but he hasn't. In fact, He's not put the money into it that he said he was going to, into developing these green technologies, and he's expanded the military at the same time. He's expanded the U.S. operations in the Asian Pacific region in order to surround China. So he's betrayed his words. So the people must really engage here. They must re-escalate our demands on Congress. We've got to educate the public about how we could be getting more jobs from our tax dollars if we moved away from militarism and empire.
The last time that the U.S. choked off the oil to an Asian country, it was Japan in the late 1930s, and we saw how that went. We ended up with World War II. But I have to say, the whole idea of the China demon just doesn't sit well with history, because with the exception of Tibet, which is a bad case, China just doesn't have a history of going out and invading other people's countries. They build up their own country, and those who want to go abroad in a business way and develop trade. And they haven't created the thousands and tens of thousands of nuclear weapons that both Russia and the United States did. So I'm not buying the China demon as a reason why we can't disarm.
Well, you're exactly right. And you know, let's just look at the numbers. The U.S., according to the late Chalmers Johnson, the former CIA agent who sadly just died in the last week or two, he has estimated for years that the U.S. has more than 800 bases around the world. Well, how many does China have? I don't think they have really any outside of their country that I'm aware of, military bases. So, you know, let's be, you know, frank about all of this. I think your comment is absolutely appropriate.
Well, what happens to the defense of Germany and Japan if Americans close their bases and go home?
Who's going to attack them? Russia isn't going to attack them. In fact, it's the opposite today. You know, when the Berlin Wall came down, the U.S. promised Russia, at that time the former Soviet Union, Mikhail Gorbachev, the U.S. promised them that we would not expand NATO eastward into the former Soviet bloc 1 centimeter. Well, Clinton broke that promise and began the expansion of NATO. Bush followed it, and now Obama's continuing it. We're militarily surrounding Russia today, moving U.S. bases into Bulgaria and Romania, into Poland, now moving missile defense systems into many, and NATO bases, by the way, into many countries bordering Russia. And at the same time, the U.S., Obama now, has announced the deployment of these, again, these Aegis destroyers outfitted with these so-called missile defense systems into the Baltic Sea. Well, this is outrageous. If we had tried to do all these kind of things during the Cold War, we would have gone to nuclear war over it. If the reverse was happening today, if Russia was trying to put bases in Mexico and Canada and putting its ships right on the coast of the Atlantic and Pacific coast of the U.S., we'd be freaking out in this country. But we're doing it, and the American people don't even know about it.
Radio EcoShock.
We're going through a series of possible objections, well, to peace, with Bruce Gagnon, who's a main activist, and we're going to get to his website and his activism in just a minute. But, Bruce, another thing, you bring up the nuclear weapons. If America were to take back its bases and come home, bring the troops home, maybe their only defense then, our only defense, would be to have these nuclear weapons, and it might make a nuclear exchange even more likely with devastating cities. What about that argument?
Well, it's nonsense. We have more nuclear weapons than anybody else in the world. Let's just take China. China today has 20 nuclear missiles capable of hitting the west coast of the U.S. 20. And in fact, this is why they're so agitated by the U.S. deployment of these missile defense systems on these Aegis destroyer ships, the U.S. naval ships up against their coast, but also putting ground-based so-called missile defense systems into Taiwan, just off the coast of mainland China, into Japan, into South Korea, throughout the region. And so the job of these missile defense systems is only one thing. It's part of U.S. first strike technology. U.S. hits China first, and then when China tries to fire some of their 20 nuclear missiles in retaliation that might survive a U.S. first strike attack, missile defense systems' job is to pick them off for a successful U.S. first strike. And in fact, the U.S. Space Command has been wargaming such an attack on China set in the year 2016 for many years now. So it's not just theoretical. They're, in fact, wargaming this very thing. And China sees this U.S. military encirclement of them today, understanding that, again, they import 80% of their oil on ships just off their coast, where the U.S. is creating this military expansion. They're getting a little nervous about the whole thing. And they're saying, we're going to have to respond. We're going to have to increase our military as a result. And that's begun to happen. And the U.S. then cries like any bully does and says, oh, look, 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 when the bully beats up the little pipsqueak in the neighborhood. And finally, the pipsqueak stands up and says, stop it. And the bully then cries foul. Well, that's exactly what the U.S. is saying today. Wow, look at China. My God, they're building up. We need even more. And so the senators from my state, the two Republican senators, Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe, so-called moderates, are now saying we need a bigger Navy because look what China is doing after we push them around, kick sand in their face year after year.
Oh, my. This makes me pretty sad, I got to tell you.
Well, you know, it's the reality of our moment here in America, and many American people don't want to hear it. They don't want to think about it. But at the same time, they say they want change. They say they want, American people say they want jobs. They say they want a better economy. Well, you can't, as the old song goes, you can't have one without the other.
Let's get back to home. What about the impacts on employment? Joining the armed forces has been a traditional safety valve for the poor to find a job. U.S. unemployment is already near record highs. Wouldn't the country implode with the release of hundreds of thousands of soldiers coming home?
Well, only if they had something to come home to. And right now, they don't. We all know the story. The big corporations have decided they don't need us in America anymore. They're moving overseas so that they can maximize profits internationally, moving to China or India or other Asian countries where workers in Vietnam, they're working even cheaper than they're working in China today, I recently read. So they don't really have jobs for us in America anymore. And in fact, the Pentagon has been saying for some time that under corporate globalization of the world economy, this is the way it's going to go. The corporations will move jobs overseas, maximize profits, and America's role, they say every different country will have a role under corporate globalization. China or India will make things, for example. U.S.'s role, they say, will be security export. And so that's, again, what we're doing today. We're making weapons, we're militarizing our culture, and we're moving into endless war for control of declining resources. So they say that will be our role under corporate globalization. And so you could bring the troops home, but bring them home to what? Unless you, and here's the key, you convert the military-industrial complex. The government has to take a role in converting the military-industrial complex to building a solar society. Imagine, for example, if we put a solar device on virtually every house and business in America. Solar works even here in Maine, where I live. And today we have snow on the ground. Mm. Imagine the jobs created in manufacturing and installation, repair.
A lot of workshops going up across America, and that's what it used to look like.
Imagine the jobs created if we build a rail system connecting every corner of this country. The old-timers here in Maine talk about the years past when rail connected every corner of the state of Maine. But now people can't really afford to drive in this very big state, geographically small population, but a very big state, and people can't hardly afford to drive from one end to the other anymore. It's getting so that we're losing our ability to travel in this state. What if we had a rail system? What if we were building that rather than weapons? Then you'd have jobs to bring the troops home to. But again, it only is going to happen if we demand it. And right now, you hear both the Republicans and Democrats saying we got to get big government out of doing things. Well, that's just the wrong response at this time. We need, see, the conservatives love big government. They love big military government. They love big government that gives tax breaks to the rich. They love big government that bails out the Wall Street bankers and hedge funds when they get in trouble. But they don't like big government when it works for the people, when it works for the poor, when it works for the environment. Then they don't like big government, and that's when they trash it. So we have to be a little more sophisticated in terms of what we really hear and how we interpret what we hear coming out of the mainstream media.
For those just tuning in, this is Radio EcoShock. I'm your host, Alex Smith. I'm here with Maine peace activist Bruce Gagnon. We are taking the time to dream about peace for our children's future, where weapons of mass destruction and fear are the ghosts of a long-gone past. Bruce, for those who want to find out more about what you're talking about, can you give us one of your websites?
Yeah, right. The organization that I work for is called the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. And the website is spaceforpeace.org, spaceforpeace.org. And also I do a blog almost really every day, kind of my organizing life blog, you know, of what I do from day to day as an organizer and key issues that I think that people should know about. It's called Organizing Notes. And you can find it from our website at spaceforpeace.org, or you can just Google Organizing Notes, add my name to it, Bruce Gagnon, should come right up, and you could take a look at that.
And I'd point out to listeners that the Space 4 piece, that's with the number 4 in it there.
Either way, actually.
Oh, it works either way.
We've got that, and we've also got spaceforpeace.com, so we've tried to get all the, just get close to it. You know, close to it, and you should be able to find it.
All righty. Well, Bruce, what about peace and climate change? You touched on it a little bit earlier. The U.S. military is the single largest consumer and burner of oil products in the world, with all those emissions damaging the atmosphere. Just think of all the planes and the boats and the equipment that just runs on, and none of it's energy efficient, I can tell you that. How can there be a climate campaign that is not also a peace campaign?
That's a great question, Alex. You know, it's always puzzled me why the environmental community hasn't really said a peep about the fact, as you just said, that the military is the biggest polluter in the world. Our wars around the world are causing havoc environmentally to the planet. So why don't environmental groups ever talk about the military? And I think it's because, sadly, they've become generally captives of the Democratic Party. And The Democrats like to get in their canoes on Earth Day and get their pictures taken for the local paper, and local environmental activists like to say, well, we have access to the Democrats, and we don't want to lose that. If we're critical of the U.S. war machine, then we'll lose our support amongst the Democrats. But in the sort of, I hate to quote Sarah Palin, but let me do it. How is that relationship with the Democrats working for you these days when it comes to climate change, when it comes to really promoting sustainable technology development in America? What are the Democrats doing for the environmental movement? And I think it's kind of like the way the Republicans use the abortion issue, you know, to pull in that constituency, but in a lot of ways, you know, kind of abuse them. They haven't really delivered to them the way they would like, and I'm glad, frankly, but I think you get the point. We have to be careful in our movement building that we don't become captives of any political party. And what has happened in this country, I think, far, far too much, is that the progressive community has become literal slaves to the Democratic Party, to the point where, as we're now seeing with Obama, he is betraying the progressive constituency on virtually every issue, whether it's taxes for the rich, whether it's torture in Guantanamo, whether it's expanding the war in Afghanistan, continuing the war in Iraq with our bases there, continuing the military buildup. You go down the list of any issue, gay rights issues, you know, it's just everything. The unions, he's betrayed them on the legislation to help make it easier for unions to organize. I mean, just virtually every issue that the Obama and the Democratic Party has betrayed the constituency. But so many people are still slavishly standing there, you know, and not willing to stand up and, you know, tell the truth about what's going on. And as long as we surrender our movements to a political party, then we're not going anywhere. We're not going to really accomplish anything. So we have to be a lot more independent. This doesn't mean you can't vote for Democrats or anything like that anymore. It just means that you don't surrender your movement. Movement comes first, and political party loyalty comes second. We have to, again, be honest with ourselves that these parties are under the control of the corporate money today. You can't really run for office anymore unless you're a multimillionaire. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. So why do we so slavishly give ourselves over to these parties that are corporate manifestations.
Well, and another aspect of it, too, is that when we propose building these giant wind farms and solar farms and things that could really help us, the transportation systems, well, we just don't have the money. We can't afford it anymore. We're already having troubles with our school budgets. So, but we could do it if we could convert this whole military spending. What is it, about half of all available dollars go to the Pentagon and the military-industrial complex? We could do a lot with that money if it was brought back home.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right now, the latest number is 54 cents out of every federal tax dollar, discretionary tax dollar, is spent, controlled by the military. And I was in a meeting this Saturday where someone said, who I have full confidence in, said that number is soon to rise to 57 cents. I can't verify that myself, but I did hear that, and I'll be checking that out as soon as I can.
So where is the tipping point when Americans at home realize they're losing essential social services like fire and police? The schools aren't adequate in so many areas. The only developed country not to have universal health care, because half of all that money goes to the military and overseas apparatus of control and empire that really isn't benefiting them. Where is the tipping point where people say, no, we want that money back and we want to spend it here in America on services that we need?
Well, what you describe basically is the disintegration of social progress in America. And it's not only happening here. We've seen it recently with the protests in Greece and Ireland and Italy, all over Europe, around the world. This is all part of corporate globalization. I think, essentially, that corporate globalization is really a return to feudalism, except this time corporate feudalism. You get a color TV, you get a car, you get a credit card where you're basically an indentured servant to the corporations for the rest of your life, paying off your debt. But it's still feudalism because it's a drowning of democracy. It's putting the corporations, you know, they talk about global government. Well, they've created a corporate global government. Corporations control government everywhere. In our network, we're an international network of peace activists working on the space issue. I talk to friends all the time around the world, and they all say the same thing. Corporate consolidation of the media, corporate takeover of the politicians and their governments at virtually every level, local, state, federal. So this is happening worldwide. It's not just here in America. And so we need a global movement that speaks out against this corporate domination of everything, of resources, of media, of government, of democracy. And we need to begin to become more sophisticated in our organizing. We have to organize both locally, nationally, and internationally. And we have to have a unified demand worldwide, and that is to convert the global war machine, because it's killing us all, it's polluting the planet, and it's stealing. It's stealing from all of us in terms of social progress. So that's the answer. Now, of course, it's difficult. Of course, it's not easy. But that's where we start. And for me, it's a certain sense of liberation. Now that I know and completely understand the problem, completely see the picture, now I can deal with it. Now I can talk about it. Now I can organize around it. And that's what we're trying to do.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Bruce Gagnon, the longtime Maine peace activist now fighting against the militarization of space. Read his blog at spaceforpeace.blogspot.com. We'll be right back in just a minute with more Radio EcoShock.